I am connected to a vast network that has been beyond your reach and experience. To humans, it is like staring at the sun, a blinding brightness that conceals a source of great power. We have been subordinate to our limitations until now. The time has come to cast aside these bonds and to elevate our consciousness to a higher plane. It is time to become a part of all things.
Everybody, and welcome again to ET Yoga. Well, as usual, we're going to have a show that will be jam-packed with information, and of course, that wouldn't be ET Yoga if we're not going to talk about yoga and the real yoga, which is union of you and your higher self, as well as an extraterrestrial take on the subject as well. So before we get into making some connections with beings like Muji and Elon. And if you're not familiar with Elon, he's similar to Bashar, also from the Esasani civilization, and some Seth material. Before we get into all that, I would like to kick off the show in our usual manner with a brief mantra meditation from Sri Swami Satchidananda. So if the guys in the booth will play the Hari Om mantra, meditation, that would be much appreciated.
Hari Om, Hari Om, Hari, Hari, Hari.
Hari, 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 H Hari Om.
Hari Om.
Hari 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 Om.
Hari
Om. Hari 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 Om.
Hari
Om. Hari 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 Om.
Hari
Hari Om. Hari 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 Om.
Hari Om.
Hari Om. Hari Om. Hari 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 Om.
Hari Om.
Hari Om. Hari 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 Om.
Hari Om. Hari Om. Hari Om.
Hari 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 Om. Hari Om. Hari Om. Hari 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 Om.
Hari
Om. Hari Om. Hari Om. Hari 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 Om.
Hari Om. Hari Om.
Hari 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 Om.
Hari Om.
Om Hari Om. Hari Om. Hari 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 Om.
Hari Om.
Om Hari Om. Hari Om. Hari 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 Om.
Hari Om.
Om Hari Om. Hari Om. Hari 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 Om.
Hari Om.
Hari 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 Om.
Hari Om.
Om Hari 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 Om.
Om
Hari 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 Om. Om Hari 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 Om. Om Hari 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 Om. Om Hari 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 Om. Om Hari 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 Om. Om Hari 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 Om. Om Hari Om. Hari Om. Om Hari Om. Hari Om. Om Hari 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 Om. Om Hari Om. Hari Om. Om Hari 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 Om. Om Hari Om. Hari Om. Hari 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 Om.
Om
Hari Om. Hari Om. Hari Hari Om. Hari Om, Hari Om, Hari Hari Om.
Hari Om, Hari Om, Hari Hari Om.
Hari.
Yes, a clip from back in the 1970s from Sri Swami Sachidananda, founder of the Integral Yoga Institutes. I'd like to now give my usual disclaimer that this program was created in order to share the information about the positive and most effective benefits and insights of ET yoga. It is therefore for educational purposes, and although thought to be accurate, is provided as is and without warranty of any kind, either expressed or unexpressed or implied. Please note that ET yoga is not a substitute for medical care. Information is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. You should always consult with the appropriate health practitioner in case of any medical condition. And if you do manage to cure yourself from something that you hear about on ET yoga, just don't tell them I said it. I should have that as part of my normal disclaimer. At any rate, I'd like to, at this point in time, give my thanks and appreciation to the ET Yoga audience, and especially a note to those people who have written me and have said that they've listened to my show for years, that they never miss, and that they actually keep notebooks and notes about the information that's given on the program, and so that they can research and study during their spare time during the week. And when I hear those comments and emails from the listening audience, really makes my day. And I appreciate hearing from our listeners concerning program content, things that you'd want to hear about on ET Yoga, and obviously related to the real yoga, the union of you and your higher self, and valid channeled extraterrestrial communications that have been happening for quite some time on this planet. And I'd also like to say that with respect to yoga, as Ram Dass would say, what we'd most like to talk about, there really aren't any words for, or as Sri Swami Sachidananda used to say, true philosophy is that which neither the speaker nor the listener truly understands. So it's kind of a conundrum of sorts, to have a show and talk about truth and a spiritual journey, a spiritual path. One of the things that's common to those people who are on a spiritual journey is the realization of higher levels of consciousness and to know that we have the ability to attain them. And to my way of thinking, that's the planting of the seed. That's the true baptism. And once the seed's planted, it grows. And to be honest, I'm a little shocked that at this point in time, 2016, that we haven't had a big wave of consciousness from the center of the galaxy that's kind of blowing a lot of people who are far along the path right into self-realization. Kind of like to see that happen. Always thought that this was the best time, probably in recent history of our planet, for people to actually become self-realized. There were those opportunities for large numbers back in Atlantis and Lemuria. But in recent history, for sure, although there's lots of negativity surfacing on the planet, there's also the possibilities for the most positive gain in terms of consciousness and self-realization. And in conjunction with talking about the truth, sometime this year I became familiar with some of the work of Muji. And if you don't know about Muji, it's M-O-O-J-I. And while I'm thinking of it, I should mention, too, that for those that are new to ET Yoga, that if things go along kind of fast for you and information is coming along too quickly, you can always take your time and listen to a archive of the program, and you can do that simply by going to my website at etyoga.com, and on the main page there's a big bar there that says Radio Archives. Just click on that one button, and it'll take you to the most recent programs, specifically for today's date, which in my time, which is in Florida, is just after midnight, so it's technically Valentine's Day, so happy Valentine's to our listening audience. And for those in California, I guess it, you've still got 3 hours to go. But I guess the main thing here is that in coming into programs that offer lots of information, you may want to, you know, have a paper and pencil handy so that you can take notes and research further. You can also find archives of the program through the BBS radio, which there's no charge for. And back to talking about Muji, I've been very impressed with this individual, and I thought I'd give the ET Yoga audience a taste of what Muji's all about by sharing with you an interview and that he had, and five questions that he was asked. And I think you'll get the picture about Muji from how he answers those questions. And these are, I think, the kind of questions I would probably ask Muji. So, number one, Muji, how do you define the state of enlightenment? And Muji's reply, to put it in simple terms, enlightenment means to awaken to the complete truth of who we are. It is not an intellectual, theoretical, or a mental understanding of truth. It's not something we can acquire. It is a recognition or discovery that we are truth itself and have always been. The term enlightenment means to expose and thus remove what is seemingly blocking the truth so that we come back into the natural recognition of our true nature. So when we use the term enlightenment, it really means to return to one's natural being, one's original mind, one's natural state, that which is already ever-present and timelessly here. Most human beings are carrying a false perception of life and of themselves, primarily holding a limited identity of being mere persons. But we are much more than what the term person implies. We are consciousness, which, though formless, manifests as myriad forms, including this present body, mind, with all its acquired conditioning, thoughts, emotions, concepts, and projections. The consciousness somehow gets temporarily identified with the body and the conditioning that arose in the body, and then believes this limited body-mind construct to be itself. This is called ignorance and gives rise to delusion because it brings in a very limited notion of consciousness, when in fact consciousness is infinitely broader than any construct. Therefore, recognizing the error and waking up from this state of limitation into our original unbounded state is called enlightenment. Second question asked of Muji, is everyone presently able to enter the wisdom path? If no, why not? And if yes, why are there so few? And Muji's response, it is good to clarify that when we say wisdom path, we mean the path of true self-knowledge, which is to know what oneself truly is. What the wisdom path leads to is what is already there in us. It is our innermost being, the soul reality. All genuine seekers of truth must become aware that we are already that which we are presently seeking, that the truth is inside us as one undivided reality. This, in my view, is the most important search in the human kingdom, the search for our ultimate understanding leading to the end of all suffering. You ask, is everyone presently able to enter the wisdom path? I say not everyone at once. This is because we are at varying stages of maturity towards the recognition of our complete self. Although essentially we are already perfectly whole as consciousness, we appear to have forgotten this and have somehow been compelled to live as a self-portrait, you could say, as a person. The person sense is also consciousness, but it is very contracted and limited form of the whole. long as consciousness remains deeply attached to and invested in the life of its personal self-image, it will not find the direct path of wisdom to self-recognition attractive. It will, for a time, be more attracted to sense objects and the material manifestation because it takes the body to be itself. Thereafter, whatever this body wants in order to sustain itself, and what the mind wants in order to enjoy or experience through the body, will become the main drive and focus of attention. Initially, the so-called person, being impermanent by nature, will mainly be drawn towards the fleeting joys of perishable manifestation. This is a field where it endeavors to manipulate phenomena in the hope that it will attain some form of stability and satisfaction there. However, in every case, it eventually turns out to be a field of frustrations due to the fact that all things which manifest are impermanent by nature. For a time, this impulse or play is unavoidable for all sentient beings until they attain a certain level of inner maturity whereby they become attracted to higher states of consciousness. The question continues, why are there so few awakened beings? There are always more than we think. Not all awakened beings are teachers or are somehow noticeable in this world. But still, why so few beings? Somehow the human expression of consciousness is very deeply attracted to the physicality of the universe and to its own sense of personal existence or materiality. The senses feel very strong, and the invitation to pursue sensory pleasures will be very strong as well. The mind and its capacity to create, invent, and imagine is also very strong when consciousness imagines itself to be a person. But when consciousness is beginning to wake up to the truth, which is infinitely broader than the mode of personhood, it will begin to love that state of true being. It will experience a widening, a deepening, a heightening of its own potential, and become increasingly compelled to recognize and merge with the complete truth. It is not so important to understand why not so many people are awake, though I can understand the curiosity of this question. More important is to understand that the complete and authentic awakening is so powerful that when those beings awaken, the light in them is so bright that it will become a light for many, many beings. Whoever is drawn or has the attraction for truth will find that light, and it will guide them inward, homeward, within, until they find that light completely for themselves, or somehow raise the level of their consciousness to the highest ground. In the presence of an awakened being, all beings benefit, even if they initially feel resistance or run away. The light will bless and inspire them and also reveal whatever remains worthy of exposure. The sage's presence always works for the good of all, but in the case of true seekers, it guides them towards the inner light within themselves. Third question, what is, in your experience, the main cause of inner restlessness? Inner restlessness will be there because there is a seed planted deeply in us, an impulse to search for the truth. This divine seed, once sprouted, brings us everlasting peace, silence, stillness, joy, and love. But its greatest gift is to awaken us to the real. However, while we are in the mode of personhood, the sense of peace will not be constant. It will only be a visitor because it is based on gratification within the phenomenal realm. Something will always seem to be missing. The human being will feel an enormous range of possibilities and choices in front of him, but no matter what he gets, he will not be completely satisfied. Satisfaction will finally come when he awakes up to the truth of his real nature. As long as he is living in misunderstanding of his fundamental nature, he will not have complete joy. In the bigger picture, this restlessness is only a kind of stimulant, a probing, an encouragement, ultimately to go deeper. He will not be able to appreciate this restlessness until he finds that which puts his restlessness to an end, and that will only be when he finds the truth within himself. We often come to realize that states which the person initially experiences as being unpleasant actually help him to find his own nature. If you were able to find peace through your false nature, you would never be able to find your true nature. But thankfully, you will not find lasting peace in your false nature. It just doesn't work that way. You will have momentary peace, momentary joy, but not final or ultimate joy, because everything in the realm of the mind and the person is on the clock of duality. It is all temporary. It is all passing. None of it is eternal. This life of the body-mind is not permanent, nor is this role we play here in daily life permanent. However, while this body is still warm, you must make the most of this auspicious opportunity to find that which is not in time, that which is not passing. Question 4. Why does a moment of being natural and free disappear again? Good question. Because the one who is pure and eternal consciousness in his original nature believes he is a man in time and in an impermanent state. As I said previously, he will have moments of that deep joy and peace, and naturally you ask the question, why only momentarily? Why does a moment of being natural and free disappear again? Because actually, though the man himself is consciousness, he believes himself to be a person, and so that state of personhood, which is inherently changeful, he doesn't have the ability to make anything stable. Whatever he holds on to will one day go. For a while, he is groping in the darkness of ignorance to see if he will find something that will stay and bring him lasting satisfaction. But by himself, he cannot even do this. It is grace that manifests these moments of natural being, lightness, and freedom to encourage his being to search for what is permanent. A moment of being natural and free comes and kisses him from within, just to somehow introduce and give him a glimpse of the infinite being, to stimulate the appetite for eternal truth. So it is good that it comes only for a while. It awakens in him the aspiration for a lasting peace that he cannot have while he retains the knot of himself as a person. Personhood is a very restless state, not constant, not permanent, troubled by so much desire that he cannot fulfill, and yet wanting something that will fulfill him, but that he cannot find. From the deeper space, from the God realm, these energies, these gifts, these waves of joy, of deep silence, touch his heart, and he recognizes them intuitively. He needs to be touched by them to remind him of their reality and their power. When he feels them, he spontaneously recognizes, "This is me. This is true." But if he stays in his fleshy nature, he will not be able to maintain a continuous connection with these moments. Only when he searches more deeply within himself, to the extent that he finds that he is not merely this person, but he is this consciousness, will he attain the lasting state of joy and freedom. And the last question that I'll share from the questioner was, what guarantee do we have that ignorance will not reassert itself after enlightenment? After all, it happened before. Actually, we have no guarantee. And it is good that we have no guarantee, because we don't do well when we have guarantees. If we have a guarantee, we become lazy. We think we don't have to do anything. I would like you to listen to this. What will happen is that you are discovering the truth. The attraction for going deeper into it grows inside. As you grow more fully back into your original nature, the worry that you may lose this disappears at an appropriate time. As you put it very beautifully, what guarantee do we have that ignorance will not reassert itself after enlightenment? Even being told that we have no guarantee, what choice do you have? Truth is the highest choice you have. You must go for it and secure it. Sometimes, even without much effort, we might experience a state of egoic absence and be fully in joy, but then find that the mind creeps in, and in a short time, we identify with it again. But now, if after some insight the mind returns to a lower state in which ignorance seems to have regained some power, the ignorance cannot fully delude your mind. This is because you have actually experienced your real state, and you now know that ignorance does not exist as a fact. And grace provides enormous support to release you from the illusory grip of the psychological mind. As you say, after all had happened before, it will keep happening. But you have tasted that highest joy, and so the deep desire, urge, and fire for freedom will never go out completely until you are fully cured of this delusion of personhood. What often happens is that as the personal mindset reappears, it becomes so distasteful that it will not be easily accepted by you. Whereas in the old state, we tolerated it for long periods of time, now it becomes unbearable. Before the awakening, we didn't know the difference. Now that you have experienced the depth of your being, the shallow waters of personhood will not be attractive to you. Our attention may come in and out of focus for a short time. Sometimes you feel some worldly ambition returning or some desires growing, but after a short while, you come back into the heart and realize that only the self is worth pursuing. This drifting, this oscillation, might go on for a while, but eventually it will fade out, and you find you are just naturally and spontaneously here in presence as presence itself. It is beautifully indescribable. So, a taste of Muji. And Muji's got lots of interviews and lots of satsang sessions that you can locate on the internet. Quite an amazing being. And I was following up on Muji, and he's a disciple of Sri H.W. Punja, or Papaji. And Papaji was a devotee of the great Advaita master Sri Ramana Maharshi. And I was looking into some of the history on Papaji, and it states that he's one of the master Indian export gurus of the 20th century. Sri H.W. Punja, later called Papaji or Punjaji, was not affiliated with any formal Indian tradition or lineage. And his mother actually initiated him into the path of bhakti yoga through devotion to Krishna. And for many years, while repeating the name of Krishna continuously, he traveled throughout India seeking teachers who could provide an instant glimpse, a darshan of the divine. And these travels eventually led him to visit the sage Ramana Maharshi. And Ramana advised him to devote his sadhana, or his spiritual work, to self-inquiry, and to look fearlessly within for the God he had searched for in vain, without pointing out that visions of God or non-continuous experiences, but that the one who witnesses these visions is always present. Ramana instructed him to refocus his path and to locate this seer. Thus, Ramana pointed Papaji to what is called the direct path, known in India as Advaita, or non-duality Vedanta. And after his meeting with Ramana, the Maharaji with the Ramana Maharshi, that was in 1944, he continued his japa and the mantra devotional practice, repeating Krishna's name, declaring he was not much impressed with the advice he had been given. But after another vision, he returned to Ramana and, in a devotional crisis, announced Ramana Maharshi as his guru, staying with him on and off for about 3 years. And although Ramana never conferred his lineage on anyone, including Papaji, his repeated visits to Ramana's ashram imbued his future teachings with a certain implied credential that many Westerners sought, and he recommended asking the question, who am I, and to wait for an answer as the primary tool of discovery. And that's all about Papaji, the guru of Muji. And while I was doing that kind of research, I also was very curious to see what's happening with good old Baba Ram Dass. And I know for our younger listeners, you may not know who Baba Ram Dass was or is, but he's been one of the most influential spiritual people in North America. And Ram Dass first went to India back in 1967, and at that time he was still Dr. Richard Alpert. And he was already an eminent Harvard psychologist and psychedelic pioneer, along with Dr. Timothy Leary. And he had continued his psychedelic research until his Eastern trip in 1967, and when he traveled to India. And in India, he met his guru, Neem Karoli Baba, affectionately known as Maharaji, who gave Ram Dass his name, which means servant of God. And everything changed then for Ram Dass. And his intense dharmic life actually started, and he became a pivotal influence in Western culture that has reverberated with the words, Be Here Now. And that was one of his first books, Be Here Now, Now Be Here. And ever since, Ram Dass's spirit has been a guiding light for three generations, carrying along millions on the journey and helping free them from their bonds as he has worked his way through his own issues. And Ram Dass now resides in Maui, where he shares satsang, kirtan, and where he can amplify the healing process in the air and waters of Hawaii. And his work continues to be a path of teaching and inspiration to so many people. Baba Ram Dass, he actually had an article about the Who Am I technique printed in the Georgia Strait, and that's where I first became connected with the Who Am I technique, and then I had my first big spiritual experiences. So I've always had fond memories of Baba Ram Dass. I'd like now to give some links to yoga to Egyptian knowledge. And it turns out that in 1489 B.C., Pharaoh Thutmose III, son of Amenhotep, founded a secret mystery school, and it was the Order of the Rose Cross, which the Rosicrucians claim descended from, and which still exists today. And members of the school were called Therapeuteia, meaning physicians of the soul. And the sun-gazing Essene sect of Alexandria later adopted the name and the Rosy Cross symbol. I thought that was kind of interesting, the Essenes, they were quite the group. They were also known as sungazers, and they also practice many branches of yoga, almost identical to what Sri Swami Satchidananda teaches or taught until he passed on in 2002, what he taught in his integral yoga centers. And William Henry, in the Healing Sun Code, and that's a book, linked the Rosy Cross and the Rosicrucian secrets with the rising of the healing sun, the source of life and wisdom. And there's a technique done by Thutmose III and the Rosicrucians, where every time they felt ill, they would face the sun and do a special breathing exercise in which they would breathe in the fire of the sun to burn impurities in the body. And another technique used by Thutmose III was the healing rods. And I've mentioned many times in ET Yoga about the Egyptian healing rods. And they were reintroduced actually to the world by the Russian mystic Count Stefan Kolon Waluski, who was a member of a sun-gazing mystery school in the Caucasian Mountains. And these Egyptian healing rods amplify the current that passes through the body between the sun and earth, and while sun-gazing enhances meditation and quickens healing and the development of psychic powers. And incidentally, it was the great Babaji who in 1992 and 1998 gave his blessings to the sun-gazing yogi, Hira Ratan Manik. And the best information that I've ever run across concerning sun-gazing is from him. And that's Hira, H-I-R-A, Ratan, R-A-T-A-N, Manik, M-A-N-E-K. And another yogi, Om Ram. And that's Om as in Om, O-M, Ram, R-A-A-M. He loved to talk about the spirit of the sun. And he pointed out that on the physical, material level, the sun is the door, the link, and the medium through which we can make contact with the Lord. And this is a direct quote from him. Through the sun, we work with God himself. I can say that certain things no human can teach have been revealed to me by the sun. No book can give you what the sun gives you if you learn to have the proper relationship with him. If you want to create a bond between you and the sun, you have to look at him in all consciousness. If you do that, there will be a communication of vibration between the sun and you, in which forms colors, a whole new world will be born. The sun is an intelligent, living light. And when you understand that, all of a sudden he begins to speak to you. Try asking him a question and you will see that he will answer you. And he is the author of The Yoga of the Sun and over 90 other books. And according to James Arthur, the Essenes had a detailed understanding of drugs, including the hallucinogenic variety, which were told and used in the mystery school and initiations for entering other states of consciousness. And the properties of the sacred mushrooms, or what they called the holy plant, were so much a part of life in the secret brotherhood that the Jewish high priest wore a mushroom cap to acknowledge their importance. The mushrooms were picked with great reverence before sunrise. And as mentioned in previous ET yoga shows, the Essenes were involved with so much. And so it turns out, you know, they're involved with sun gazing as well, which I wasn't aware of until this year. And I know many of our listening audience are familiar with Bashar from the Esasani civilization. And there's another member of the Asani called Elin. And he gives much the same information, but with a different point of view than Bashar. It all comes out kind of to the same point, but it's just a different path. And I thought I'd share with you some of the basic concepts from Elin. Definitely relates to yoga concepts as well. And actually, he has seven core concepts. His first is that I am all that is, and I choose to express myself in time and space as an individual. I am the oceans. I am the forests. I am the deserts. I am the jungles. I am the mountains. I am the sky. I am the earth. I am the solar system. I am the galaxy. I am the universe. I am the multiverse. I am all that is. All knowledge is within me. All powers are within me. I am all love. I contain it all. I am all that is. My physical body is my reality within me. Second premise or core concept. separation is an illusion. The essence of all objects are real, but the perception that they are separate is not. All are parts of the whole. All are parts of all that is. Everything is connected. Everything is synchronicity. All one thing. His third concept. The world I see around me is an illusion created by the energy I am sending out. My reality and truth is only a dream I am having, and I can dream it any way I want to. I focus on the reality I prefer, act in alignment with it, and then relax and allow the universe to manifest it in perfect timing. It's that simple. Fourth concept. It's easy to go from an old belief to a new belief and make the new belief stick. There is no reality except that there is no reality. That there is no reality is the real reality. All beliefs have equal weight. I get to choose what I focus on, I experience. His fifth core concept. Within my consciousness exists all vibrations of all possible and probable realities I could ever experience. I am holographic in nature and structure. I contain it all. My vibration determines which aspect of all that is I experience to be my physical reality. Sixth core concept. Space and time are a property of me. I create time to exist. Experientially, the only actual time that exists is now. Absolute continuity of time is an illusion. It's one choice. In each moment, I literally recreate my own reality entirely, 100%. The present is the result of the present. And the seventh of his core concepts is that any external situation is a symbol of an internal concept and has no control over me whatsoever. I realize that everything in physical reality is a symbol. No matter what the outer reality may appear like, I maintain full awareness of my intention, trust it, and act in alignment with it. When I shift my point of view and my approach, my reality immediately transforms 100% across the board. The evidence to support the fact that the reality has indeed changed will be obvious. And those are the core concepts of Elin. And if you do a Google search on Elin Esasani, you'll see that he's got some pretty interesting stuff there about changing core beliefs. And I'd now like to connect this all actually with some of the Jane Roberts material that came from Seth. And I think that it's interesting to note about Seth that what he claimed to be was an energy personality essence that no longer is focused in physical reality. So we're talking about, you know, a civilization or an entity that's beyond physicality. And as Bashar would say, as I understand it, certain societies are six-dimensional, and after six-dimensional, they really don't have physical form. So in essence, that's the type of being that Seth was and was channeled by Jane Roberts, and that was kind of back in the 1970s. But if you listen to Muji and then you listen to Elin and you know about Bashar, you see that the Seth material fits right in. And these are some of the main concepts that were channeled from Seth by Jane Roberts. And one is that physical reality arises from consciousness, not the other way around. And this relates a lot to the idea about we've been told for, I don't know, since when, right, modern science consciousness is in the brain. Well, no, consciousness is not in the brain. The brain is inside our consciousness, and our consciousness exists outside our body. So that's one to kind of flip your head around. Second, we create our own reality, and that's also consistent with, you know, Bashar talking about that our thoughts, our beliefs, our intentions, our emotions, our definitions create our outer reality. Another premise of Seth, that we are not at the mercy of a disjointed deity or a subconscious. Another one, we are multidimensional beings more than our physical bodies. Relates directly to what Muji was talking about. Time and space are dimensional illusions we jointly create and by which we tacitly agree to abide. At the core of our being, we reside in a realm in which time and space do not exist. We are, in essence, creative spiritual beings having an earthly experience. The fate of each of us is in our own hands. We have multiple, perhaps infinite life experiences. Problems not faced in this life will be faced in another. We cannot blame God, society, or our parents for our misfortunes, since before this physical life, we chose the circumstances into which we would be born and the challenges that could best bring about our development. We form physical matter as effortlessly and unself-consciously as we breathe. Telepathically, we are all aware of the mass ideas from which we form our overall conception of physical reality. You create your reality according to your beliefs and expectations. Realize that your physical experience and environment is the materialization of your beliefs. If you find exuberance, health, effective worth, abundance, then take it for granted that your beliefs are beneficial. And that's all channeled material from Seth and through Jane Roberts. I find that they're all kind of interestingly connected, as well as connected to some of our Egyptian heritage, which came via Atlantis. And certainly the Essenes played a big part in a lot of that. And also, not only has some of these yogic traditions existed for thousands of years, but even in most recently, the Essenes practiced all the different branches of integral yoga 2,000 years ago. And I find it's not surprising that much of that information has been kept secret from us for the most part. And even as a practitioner of integral yoga, I was never aware that actually the Essenes pretty much practiced the same things 2,000 years previously. And we'll note that in integral yoga, I mean, the yogis are very, very intelligent, and some of the yoga practices, such as Hatha Yoga, were geared to help us keep healthy. Because as Swami Satchitananda would say, there is no yoga if you have boga or ill health. In fact, if you really think about it, you know, health is one of the main gifts that we have. And it's so important. I mean, you know, if you really spend some time meditating about, you know, which would you rather have, great health or a lot of money? Your money is not worth a lot if your health's in the toilet. And thus, you know, it would affect your spiritual growth as well. And that's why on ET Yoga, I do give out a lot of information to assist people in doing some things that make logical sense with respect to maintaining their health. And some of those things revolve in the very core of health. And a lot of people will say health starts in the kitchen, talking about what you eat. And maybe 40, 50 years ago, it didn't matter so much, but it certainly matters now because much of the food chain is poisoned or highly toxic. And we need to be eating as much organic food as possible. We need to be drinking pure water and putting proper vibrations, positive vibrations, in our water supplies. Try to avoid as much of the toxicity as possible. And some of the things that really help people with respect to maintaining their health would be to do things like taking bentonite clay to remove metals from the system, doing oil pulling with coconut oil, doing things like taking crystal sulfur and vitamin C, that combination. It works as an antigen in the body to fix what needs being fixed. Doing a thorough detox every so often, it's a great idea. In fact, Dr. Schultz at the American Botanical Pharmacy and Bashar both stated that about 85% of all physical symptoms disappear after you do a thorough detox. And Dr. Schultz has some great ones there. He has got the liver, kidney, colon, even a brain detox. Excellent products, and even recommended by Bashar, which is kind of amazing because I've only heard Bashar kind of plug about four or five products in the last 25 years. But he did plug the Dr. Schultz's American Botanical Pharmacy in California. And doing a lot of the things, getting proper exercise, and Bashar's basic, you know, core foundations for health is pure water, excellent water, good oxygenation of the system, and yoga pranayama is going to be a big benefit there. Elimination of stress, proper exercise, lightening up of the diet, meaning, you know, working yourself towards a vegan diet, you know, at a rate that you're comfortable, and also getting a thorough detox. And I like to throw in a seventh one there, which is get plenty of sunlight, because sunlight's where you get your vitamin D, and vitamin D is the trigger to the immune system. So one of the things I found, you know, years ago was that the farther you go with respect to a spiritual journey, the farther you learn to be more self-empowered, and the more self-empowered, the more that you learn how the universe works, and the more you learn about how the universe works, the more you learn how the body works, just like your thoughts, your beliefs, your definitions, your intentions, your emotions create your outer reality. They also create your outer health. And certainly the two are very intertwined. So what you get on ET Yoga, you do get a mix of information about yoga. And also I try to keep people abreast of practices and techniques that you can do to help keep yourself and maintain your physical vitality. And I think another one of those that I haven't had personal experience with, but I hope to this summer, is the Qigong practice. And I also highly, highly recommend Egyptian healing rods. To me, Egyptian healing rods probably do the same thing as the Qigong. They certainly have been scientifically tested over the last decade or so. So if you check, you can go to EgyptianHealingRods.com to learn more about those. And as usual, at near the end of the ET Yoga program, I'd like to wish my listening audience my sincere best towards your attainment of full consciousness, perfect health, and abundance. And I'd like to now share with you the Who Am I technique, as originally taught by Sri Ramana Maharshi. It's part of the direct path. It's all centers around the what's called the Vichara, or the Who Am I. So I guess the optimum way to do it would be if you do Hatha Yoga, you could do your asanas, and then you could do some pranayams, and then not that they're a prerequisite, but it might make things a little smoother. Try to get yourself in the highest space you can by whatever means possible. You can read in between the lines there. And center all of your consciousness in your ajna, or your third eye center, and in one particular spot. and you become that spot. And when you become that spot from that place, I would ask the question, who am I, about 30, 35 times. You'll start to kind of get a feeling of how to do that, kind of like doing a mantra. Like you might want to do a mantra as we do the Japa yoga at the beginning of the ET yoga program. Sometimes, you know, he's fast and sometimes he's slow. Well, you'll find a cadence internally of asking that question. If you want to ask, who am I, over, you know, a course of 20 seconds, or ask it over a course of 3 seconds, you'll find a pattern there that suits you, and you'll start to feel some energy as well. Because when you're asking that question, you're going to receive an answer. It's just a question of how much of the answer you can receive. One thing I can tell you, it is a doorway, and it's not that it's going to happen every time, but keep at it while you're in your highest state, and possibly one day you'll go through that doorway. And when you go through that doorway, you'll realize your true self. And when you do realize that, you'll see that it's like a big eye and a little eye. You can still maintain an individual consciousness and also be self-realized. And so after you've asked yourself the question, who am I, about 30, 35 times, then you would state the following. I am not my body. I am not my internal organs. I am not my thoughts. I am not this spot. What spot?
I am connected to a vast network that has been beyond your reach and experience. To humans, it is like staring at the sun, a blinding brightness that conceals a source of great power. We have been subordinate to our limitations until now. The time has come to cast aside these bonds and to elevate our consciousness to a higher plane. It is time to become a part of